The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
And you're on the Deadline Report with Fresh FM, care of the great little radio station broadcasting at the top of the south, Nelson 107.2, Nelson and Tasman 104.8, Eastern Golden Bay 95.0, Blenheim 88.9, or listen to us on the postmanproductions.com, where you'll find my website as well as the links to the Fresh FM podcast, which we normally get up in the top five there. So if you're keen to actually come and support us, again, reach out media@gmail.com. We're just doing a general show. What we're doing at the moment is we're actually preparing for our summer season, which will come in October, November, January, December, I think somewhere in amongst there. And we're going to have all sorts of incredible guests. We're going to have Dylan Blair, who's going to be talking about his father's disappearance, Kerry Blair, and some of the connections to the Scott Watson case, which is really crowding to get things. Things are very interesting and are happening at the moment within the New Zealand Police. We've obviously heard of the case of McSkimming, who's been stood down because of content on his computer. I am led to believe that there are more developments to take place on that particular case. I'm just going to be a bit careful on that one at the moment because, as I said, things are unfolding and I don't want to jeopardise things. But yes, at the same time, we are hearing reports at the moment that there are anti-corruption committees taking place. And what's kind of interesting very much about these committees is that, unlike the Independent Police Complaints Authority, these are taking place without really the control of the police. And we're also seeing that there is some very deep scrutiny taking place of the police in the far north as well as in the far south. And a lot of this has actually followed after the events of Christchurch. We're not saying that they're necessarily related, but there does seem to be a sort of a degree of cultural change occurring within Wellington in relation to corruption within New Zealand following the events in 2019. And of course, one of the things also occurred is that Transparency International has bumped us down from the top place to number four least corrupt country in the world, which most of us in the know still laugh quite hilarious about this. And I find this quite funny because I wrote in my first book in 1999 about, and when I was writing about money laundering, organized crime, and the Russian mafia in here in New Zealand at the time when no newspapers were touching it. And in fact, we were running around kissing the Russians' cheeks when guys like Mikhail Kimmich came in. And very recently, a very senior academic turned around and wrote, "Oh, yes, I'm doing a groundbreaking stuff on the Russian organized laundering for New Zealand connection to dodgy, sketchy oil trade through." And I went, "I'm pretty sure I covered that 20 years ago." So he said, I'm a little bit laughing because of things that I said 20 years ago, which are now all been proven correct. And in the case of Transparency International, what actually happened there was they used to send us the form and then we would send that form back unfilled. And that was where we got our perfect zero, which all the mainstream media was used to run out and go, and I mean mainstream media, corporate media talking about in the current news cycle, go, "Oh, we're the least corruption country." And that's just a load of tosh, which we're now finding out, which is kind of what my first book's State Secrets actually said. The organized crime was causing a major corruption within the Pacific. Again, over the ditch, at the moment, I'm also working on a book which will cover some very, I've traveled basically to Australia and New Zealand, and I'm at the moment in talks with quite a large publishing company about that. So we'll probably at the end of next year, we should be able to have some developments on you on that particular issue. But yeah, we will be looking at things like the Construction Forestry Miners Union, which sort of spilled out of the Painter Dockers Union of the 1970s in Australia, which now is like really basically been taken over by organised crime in Australia. And a lot of the things that are happening in Australia, we're starting to realise are also happening here in New Zealand, which, of course, it's not that they weren't warned, because we've had senior police officers involved in the original Mr. Asia from the Australian side come over and warn us, and we have had top cops from Hawaii come over and warn us, and took us 20 years to wake up to this particular fact. And so we'll also be talking about this with one of New Zealand's top private investigators. We will be along with my show, we'll be talking to Alexa Forbes, Otago Regional Councillor, basically about some of the dodgy things that the mining industry are actually up to. We'll be talking to Kevin Morant about some of his encounters with the Sam's Creek protests. And again, I've talked to you there about different books and works overseas, which have, you know, pointed the finger at players like OceanaGold as not very good global citizens. And while Shane Jones thinks that they're actually wonderful and they're going to bring us all this money and we should, you know, damn those wokesters, I would say, actually, from a business point of view, getting in bed with some of these companies is probably not that great. And especially when you take out account the costs that will occur to us in terms of wear and tear on infrastructure, and the fact that if they mess up, and again, I didn't get a chance to talk to Bruce from the Museum of Natural Mysteries and Curiosity, who's done a lot of work on climate change. And again, I brought Bruce onto the show because I haven't, it's not that I'm anti-climate change, but I have a viewpoint that there is a lot of issues, not just climate, pesticide, poison, war, financial degradation, social inequality, which are all contributing to the ecological, basically the house is on fire fully. And I sometimes get a bit frustrated because it's not just about climate change, which is far too often hijacked by corporate agendas or used for image laundering, while actually kind of ignoring the fact that, like, for example, the United Nations, and I've been saying this again for decades, the United Nations Sustainable Program against climate change, the 17 points of sustainability, I said were doomed to fail because they had all been co-opted by big players such as DuPont, Coca-Cola, and people that just have a really, really, really terrible, I mean, they're not good people. That's all you really need to say. And Helen Clark, who, again, I have very mixed feelings about, but she was the Secretary of the United Nations for the Development Program, and she's come out and said, actually, the United Nations has failed. And she's saying it's failed because of the very factors I've said, which is, you know, it's been used as a tax dodge and an imagery laundering while not addressing some of the core fundamental issues, which, you know, in a sense can be very summarized very much as the centralization of wealth and power. And again, in our summer season coming up, we will be going into a special on the Epstein affair, which, whereas a lot of people really focus on, you know, the human trafficking, all these terrible things that Epstein did, which, you know, my attitude is, I'm not saying that things didn't happen, but I'm kind of going, you know, there's lots of screaming and screeching, but when it comes to presenting us physical evidence about what actually occurred, it's mostly shaped in the brackets of hearsay. But when we start to look at the issue where there's physical evidence, such as the money trail, suddenly those corporate media sources get very, very quiet. And when you start to look at Jeffrey Epstein's role involved in things like the subprime mortgage, and you look at the characteristics of his own transfer of wealth, where you start to find that not only do they match the profile of the Global Clinton Initiative, but they also mentioned things such as the Wachovia banking scandal, which took place in fact, the peak of the Wachovia banking scandal, which took place in 2009, was largely that they found a Russian Antonov leased from New Zealand in Thailand, loaded with arms on its way, or North Korean arms loaded on its way to the Middle East, where it was believed that those weapons were going to be swapped for components used for weapons of mass destruction that came from Western sources. Now, again, our beloved corporate media, who have suddenly jumped on the, oh, yes, yes, New Zealand's a money laundering hub, and oh, those evil, evil Russians that they wouldn't talk about when those evil Russians were offering to sponsor the America's Cup. And in fact, the evil Russians that we talk about, Mikhail Kimmich was one of them, Warriora Water Trust was part of that whole package. The media still talks about these evil Russians, but they fail to mention that the parent company actually didn't end in Moscow. It actually ended in Las Vegas with people that were connected to the US Department of Defense. And likewise, the problem we have with all these new experts on the subject of money laundering and organized crime in New Zealand is they want to tell you that it's all the evil Russians' fault. But they failed. The obvious fact that it's not is when you look at the Wachovia scandal will prove this, is that the banking networks that they were utilizing go back to pre-1970s. a lot of these banks that were involved in Nauru, Nauru, Cook Islands, Vanuatu, were basically banks that were set up, if not by the CIA, by some of their very close buddies. And, you know, these marched into things like the Nugenhand Bank, which had spillovers into the Bishop Wong Dillingham, or what's known as the Maori Loans Affair in New Zealand, which had spillovers into the Winebox Inquiry, which then was what I largely wrote about those three, you know, factors I just mentioned, which then mentioned were vindicated by the findings of the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers, which I think occurred just after the Wachovia North Korean scandal that I talked about. And so all these banks demonstrate that actually these banks' networks were set up way before Putin was on the scene, but they do have replications into the systems that basically Jeffrey Epstein was utilizing. And again, we'll be talking about some of these events in terms of their life before they became fashionably sane to report them with Michael Field, who is a veteran journalist. He's been around longer than possibly, I won't say longer than that because he might take offense at that, but he's been doing this for a very, very long time and is recognized as being an exceptionally credible source when it comes to Pacific affairs. And again, I brought him on because Michael was probably one of the first people to turn around and talk about the Russian mafia's involvement in the Pacific and who they were dealing with. Long, you know, probably he was covering it in the mid-1990s, whereas some of these people that have suddenly turned in to claim themselves to be experts on the subject, as of yesterday, you know, they weren't on the scene at all, and, you know, said they are projecting their expertise in a very selective way, which kind of messes, you know, it doesn't talk about the money network. So we'll be talking about this sort of particular thing. And we're going to have a great season actually made up for you. We're also going to talk to you about New Zealand's involved in the increasing role involved in the space industry or the space military industry. And again, these are things which I have been reporting on for a very, very long time. I've been reporting about New Zealand's role in creating space bombers from declassified papers involving what we would call unmanned aerial vehicles before we even knew what that terminology literally were like saying at the time. I think it was the 1990s. These have been mentioned that we're going to be working on these, but we don't actually know what they are. And now we're sort of, and I said, you know, probably about 3 years ago, these wonderful space planes that we're developing down in Oamaru, they're not just there for civilian purposes. They're going to be used for military purposes. And I think as of last week, that just came online, along with the fact that Starlink, which I also talked to you about its military ramifications, has now been cleared by the government to actually handle military communications. So we'll be talking to you about that. We'll be talking to you about New Zealand's increasing role, or not in its increasing role. It's actually from a file which I started when I launched my magazine Deadline in 2001, just a week after September 11th, and we kind of really got our wheels running in about 2003. And from about 2003 to 2006, I did a series of articles looking about scientists that were dying in New Zealand that had links to some very disturbing branches of microbiology science, which had military overlaps. And this was way, of course, before the COVID or Wuhan institution, which, again, what we're finding is that, you know, local laboratories who actually have they're marking themselves as being under the business of biosecurity or preventing bio warfare threats. But, you know, the problem with that particular industry is what goes up, it comes down as well. And I think public have a right to ask questions and not just get, I mean, what will happen quite often is that the media will jump on this topic and they will be very, same with the space situation we've seen with the warm, glowing, gushing tones that we get for Rocket Lab. They'll be all very good to go, isn't this great? It's creating jobs and aren't we so bright? And, you know, and they don't really talk about what the negative impacts are. And having been through one of the things that struck me about the situation with COVID and the Wuhan institutions, whether or not we know what the source of COVID is, and there are only two considered theories at the stage. One is the bat theory, which has got so many holes once you understand who Peter Daszak is and what his role in launching that bat theory was, and who he sold it to and how it was peddled. It becomes actually a very, under the concepts of Occam's razor, it becomes very flimsy, which we're left with the idea that it came out of the Wuhan Institute. And I actually think there's room for a third theory, but regardless, the point I'm saying is that what we discovered after COVID and we started to realize that what was happening in the Wuhan Institution in terms of they're working on gain function was that this is very nasty, nasty stuff. This is, has potential to literally poison the entire world. And there are nearly 1,300 laboratories out there that are involved in this particular industry. This is a new arms race. It's more scarier than nuclear bombs because it's cheaper and it's accessible not just to state players and superpowers, but to terrorist groups and organized crimes and blackmailers and even industrial espionage in terms of using products to generate money. These are the realms which are available in terms of bioengineering. And if you read into things like cyberpunk and so on, which are often about a dystopic kind of world, which we're increasingly, heading towards, those books kind of give us a glimpse of what will happen if we don't actually start making sure that there's better regulations and better control and better public awareness. Because again, it's not like there's like one weapon being made in a laboratory and they're all sitting cracking over their elbows going, whoa, ho, ho, ho. It is really a case of all these laboratories out there. They might be working on proteins, they might be working on another component, but when these are all brought back to who their clients might be, who are more often, it might be the military, but it's hiding for a university or another corporation. Not even the scientists themselves that are working on it necessarily understand that what the bigger applications are. And that's why we need to have a much more adult understanding about what is going on in terms of bioengineering, not just from a medical, isn't this great, it'll make cancer and Alzheimer's go away, but actually it can also make entire nations go away. In fact, if you want to be really unscrupulous about it, you can say, what a really sneaky weapon you could use to actually get rid of aging populations so you don't have to pay their pensions or have to worry about spending that money on elderly people because they're dying earlier because they have all this junk carrying around. Not saying that's what's going on, but to quote Peter Williams when he wrote the book Stone on Duty, and he's talking about the fact that corruption occurred within the New Zealand police because nobody went looking for it and nobody wanted to accept that actually this was a possibility, and that those two combined factors ultimately created the environment from which actually corruption actually grew. And, as I've pointed out in my books, that organized crime is not just about some exciting, sensational stuff happening. It underwrites workers' rights. It pushes property prices up so that you can't afford prices. It destroys your integrity and trust in local government. It is a big issue. It is not only a big issue, but one of the things I say in my book was, don't take my word for it. We've got actual, experts out there that are saying actually gangs are going to be the biggest threat to national security in New Zealand in the coming years. The question in terms of how these gangs got so big, how they've been armed, how they've been increasingly politicalized and weaponized, that's another subject. But the point was, this isn't anything new. And actually, the experts were telling us, we were just choosing not to actually listen. Of course, we'll have lots of really, really great music on our show as well. And we will, I'll put this all together so you can come to my website, postmanproductions.com. Check out my website. I also, encourage people, if you want to kind of get behind me and support me, get in contact with me, because, unlike a lot of people that say, give me your money and that's it, what I actually say to people is, once you agree to be a patron, which is normally about $100 a year, what it allows you to do is you get access to me. So when you're like looking at a newspaper article and you're like, what do you think? I'll give you 5 minutes of my time throughout the year. If you ask me can you find any information to back this, other additional links or articles, I will find those stuff for you. My research is, I have banks and NGOs hiring me. So I'm giving this to you at a very affordable rate. But as I said, I'm not just going, here, read this, pay me money. I'm saying you get something in return for it. Throughout the whole year, of course, you will find us on Fresh FM, The Deadline Report, Nelson 107.2, Nelson and Tasman Districts 104.8, Eastern Golden Bay 95.0, Blenheim 88.9, or go and visit the Fresh FM website to look up The Deadline Report for all my past and coming podcasts, or as I said, the website. And you can even, approach me to be a friend on Facebook. But again, friends are only really kind of reserved for subscribers. I try to keep my network small. I'm a journalist. You can read my books. You can read my newspaper. Online is kind of like my open work and diary. I don't care if I don't have thousands and hundreds of thousands of people coming to my page, because I can't frankly handle it. But I would like to have, in the current moment, we've got about 200 supporters. I would like to see that up to 300 or 400, because what happens is I then take that money and I use it to go and do research projects and spend it on actually, you know, getting additional archive subscriptions. And effectively, it all goes back into me finding out more information. And what I offer you is, unlike a lot of so-called influencers and a lot of so-called independent media out there, aside from the fact that I've been doing this longer than most of them, I'm not doing it saying vote for the Green Party or vote for the ACT Party. My attitude towards politicians is, how do you know when they're lying? Their lips are moving. I am completely apolitical. I am work the facts, and so I let the stories at the end of the day produce themselves. So, you know, what you get is, somebody said this, I don't always agree with Ben, but he calls it as he sees it. And that's what I, you know, what you can get out of me. There are lots and lots of people telling you what the truth is. It's really an issue of, once you get to work with me, you understand that at least what you can rely on me is that I do my utmost to make sure that the work is accurate, it's fact-checked, and there are multiple sources. This is Ben Vidgen on the Deadline Report, and we've got lots of shows, as I said, coming to you in October, November, and December. Look out for the Ben's New Zealand 2025 report, which will be in all great cafes throughout the South Island, along with the website, which also includes some of our YouTube clips, which probably we need to get them off the ground, and we'll work on that. But at the moment, for the 5 people that actually watch them, good on you. For the tens of thousands of people that actually come to this website, good on you as well. And don't be afraid to send us a message or get in contact, because I do like to give some of you guys some of the feedback that we actually get to all these shows that we get. And it's, you know, it's we more the merrier. Thank you for, again, being, we're heading into, you know, that time of the year where we'll have Christmas. We'll also, do it. We're not going to do an interview with, Santa Claus this year, because he's been taken over by the ice cream man, who's now responsible for, dealing to all the good children and those naughty, evil immigrant children that are trying to sneak their way into the United States. So we'll be doing the Christmas, Satan Claus being replaced by the ice cream man. And we'll also have our book review as well, which is a list of all the books, documentaries, some of the really great guests I've actually had on board as well. So, you know, finding out places where you can go to find additional quality information. Plus, I guess probably a little more, bit more development current affairs as they take place. Very interesting things actually taking place at the moment in terms of Russia and the Ukraine. Again, kind of worth mentioning, like, you know, the frustration I get is we're living in a world where we expect everything to be black and white. Now, I don't think that Vladimir Putin is a particularly nice person. I do think that we have missing, when we're not focusing enough on the fact that who actually made him, which is actually a lot of people that are complaining about him now. And again, that links very much into the money trails that I've been talking to you about. And of course, the people that were saying that, you know, all these things about him, like, oh, he's terrible, terrible people. You know, probably about, what would it be now, 2025, so 2022, February, they invaded. All these mainstream news organizations have been guilty of the CNN effect, which is they've been embedded themselves firmly into the, well, in this case, the NATO military alliance. And they were telling us, oh, Russia's going to be defeated in a year, and Putin's unpopular, he's going to be assassinated. And then, of course, none of that happened. And I sort of think, you know, my point is, really, guys, seriously, if these people keep getting it wrong, like they keep doing all the time, don't you think it's about time to start asking about what else they're actually not telling the truth about? It's not a question of I'm on Vladimir Putin's side. It's a question of a lot of the road to this conflict that was begun by people who are now, you know, complaining about him now. And they did it because, not because they had your best interest at heart or they care about the planet or rainbow rights, because they don't. What they did is they did it because they wanted to push free trade east so that they could, you know, carry on this model of where corporations can never be faulted. We can't criticize them. Again, we sort of get this argument about, you know, what this government's up to in terms of stopping protests. I don't buy it, because I remember that the Labour government is equally were very good at censorship and shutting us down. And I think really we've got to address the issue that all governments that try to demonize activism really need to be called to task. We're living in a world of neoconservative dominance and neoliberalism, and quite often we mistake neoliberalism for being left-wing when it's just better camouflage. But the end result is make more money, which ultimately lends us into a path which is not good for the planet, it's not good for human rights, and it's not good for all things good and decent. You know, so I think it's about less, you know, my argument or my narrative a lot of the time on the show is about don't look left, don't look right. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm not anti-left or anti-right wing. I'm anti-extremism. Wake, woke. It starts with W. It's got a vowel in the middle. It's got a K. And it's got one other consonant, just like that other four-letter W word. What I think we need to look up is up, and we need to follow the money trail, which is increasingly, as you follow it up, you know, again, you look at the front bench of Parliament, doesn't matter which National, Labour, or for that matter, the Green Party, and I have to say, I'm afraid to say the Greens have lost a lot of their mana, and that is actually damaging their cause, because they have brought in people that are more interested in identity politics and their own posturing than actually having the mana that we once attributed to people like Rod Donald and Jean Fitzsimmons, who really kind of did small miracles of the Green Parties, which have largely been undone by some pretty spoilt, bratty behaviour. And I think probably the Greens need to own that. But regardless, when you look at these front benches, it's kind of like the same thing. It's, you know, corporates can do no evil. And I'm sorry, like, you know, when you've got James Shaw, who's obviously no longer with the Greens Party, but we forget, you know, this was a public relations expert for Bayer and Monsanto, and you kind of left going, how the hell did that happen? And it said, you know, the whole idea about, oh, isn't 1080 and Prodificum, isn't that wonderful? It's like, well, actually, let's step back, because originally we had a lot of DSIR scientists saying, actually, 1080 is not that great. We had Rod Donald saying, you cannot get pest-free zero, it's never going to happen. And the idea of saying that pesticides are good way is opening you to mission creep, which is pretty much what happened, because then it became from 1080 to, oh yes, oh, no, it's not, it's terrible, but what other choices, to now we're also including Prodificum, which it literally is defined as a bioweapon because it can work its way into the food chain. And our approach to environmentalism is, let's spray and use a lot more chemicals and a lot more GM stuff, even though we don't. It's actually a continuation of, once upon a time we had problems in New Zealand, so we brought rabbits in and that didn't work out, so then we started to bring in ferrets and that didn't work out, and we're kind of carrying on the same top hat kind of attitude, when we really kind of like need to get back to some very basic whole earth catalogue approaches to environmentalism, which have nothing to do with approving corporate agendas or corporate driven science. Don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely love science, but I think we've somehow have a very delusional idea that's almost bordering on religious fanaticalism, that if you're wearing a white coat you can do no good. That's not necessarily the case. Science actually needs a lot more checks and balances, which are, again, we're seeing each government that gets in, they're removing more and more of them, and the outcome is only people that profit are the money people, and they are not your friends. And on that note, I'm going to go out today with one of my all-time favourites, The Bar's Armageddon Days. You will reap what you sow. And this is Ben Vigen on The Deadline Report. Come back and see us next week, because we'll have more for you, I'm sure.
Another thing coming. If he ever finds out, he's hiding. real Jesus Christ were to stand up today, he'd be gunned down cold by the CIA. But the lights that now burn brightest behind the stained glass will cast the darkest shadows upon the human heart. But God didn't build himself that throne. God doesn't live in Israel or Rome. God doesn't belong to the Yankee dollar. God doesn't plant the bombs for Hezbollah.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.